The Volume.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 Podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back. It's another episode of Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. We are loaded up on the show today. We begin with Keith Idek, senior writer over at BoxingScene.com. An incredible amount of news in boxing over the last week or so. You've got Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder being canceled and then rescheduled. A massive fight between Jermell Charlo and Brian Castaño on Saturday on Showtime. And Canelo Alvarez, who's he going to fight? We're coming down to the wire with Canelo. A little bit later on, Jermell Charlo himself, he is going to join the show and talk to us about this big fight with Brian Castaño. Charlo has a chance to become the first junior middleweight to be undisputed champion in the four-belt era. I get into it with him about that and so many other things as well. Finally, Tyron Woodley, the ex-UFC welterweight champion, he is going to get into boxing in August when he takes on Jake Paul. I've got some skepticism about MMA guys coming over to boxing. I talked to Woodley about that and much more. As always, best way to support this podcast, get over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we do this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to the show. All right, Keith Idek is back, BoxingScene.com. He is in San Antonio for one of the biggest fights of the summer, the best fight on the Showtime summer calendar. That is Jermell Charlo, Brian Castaño, 154-pound unification fight. Just a terrific action matchup, meaningful matchup. Keith, I know you got to be pretty excited to be down there for that. I mean, that's got to get your blood going a little bit.
It's a really good fight, Chris, and it's going to determine only the sixth fully unified champion in any division during the four-belt era. So it's a pretty uncommon occurrence, and it's a very good fight. You know, both guys. Charlo, you could argue, should be undefeated because a lot of people think that he did enough to beat Tony Harrison in that fight, but came back to avenge it by knocking out Harrison. And Castaño is undefeated. So, I mean, you have two top-level guys, all the titles on the line. It's a very, very good fight. It's not a pay-per-view level fight just because there aren't a lot of people who know Brian Castaño outside of boxing. But it's an excellent fight. And boxing fans, especially hardcore boxing fans, should very much be looking forward to
it. All right, so I want to get into that, and I want to get into Canelo, the latest there, Caleb Plant, Dimitri Bivol in the mix for Canelo's next fight. Gennady Golovkin, what is going on with him? And I'm going to finish with Tim Zhu and get your thoughts on this rising 154-pounder with the famous last name. But let's start with the breaking news of last week, Keith, and that is Tyson Fury testing positive for COVID-19. Some version of COVID made its way through Tyson Fury's camp. Multiple people in that camp contracting COVID. The fight that was scheduled for July 24th was scrapped. The new date is October 9th. I guess start there, Keith. I mean, my first reaction was, why the hell wasn't Tyson Fury vaccinated? I mean, the guy has been gallivanting around the country for the better part of the last few months. He's in Florida. He's in Texas. He's in Las Vegas. Like, why, with so much money at stake, was this guy not vaccinated? And it wasn't because he's got some fundamental issue with vaccination. He had one shot. So he clearly is okay with getting vaccinated. This is the second time this summer, when you throw in Teofimo Lopez, that we've got a major fight that is postponed because a fighter contracts COVID that may not have been at risk for contracting COVID if they had been vaccinated. So give me your reaction to everything that's unfolded over the last week with Wilder Fury.
You know, it's interesting, Chris, in that the day of the press conference in Los Angeles where they officially announced the Fury-Wilder third fight, Bob Arum said, he told a small group of reporters after the press conference, that Wilder was fully vaccinated, according to what Shelley Finkel told him, and that Fury was fully vaccinated. So obviously, I did ask Bob about this. I said, hey, Bob, you know, you've been on record as saying that he was fully vaccinated, and clearly he was not. So what happened there? Was there miscommunication? Were you led to believe that he was fully vaccinated? The answer that Bob gave me was that he was under the impression that he got the Johnson & Johnson shot, which of course is a one-shot deal, but he actually got the Moderna shot, the first Moderna shot, and did not get the second shot. Of course, I asked Bob why he didn't get the second shot, and he said that the way Fury explained it to him was, now you're supposed to get the shots about a month apart. I don't know the date when he got the first Moderna shot, but he was already in camp for the July 24th date, and he did not want to have an adverse reaction to the second shot and have to miss some of training camp. Whether you believe that, whether that's actually what happened, who knows? But that is what Bob Arum told me the other day. That's his understanding of it. You know, Bob, look, people are going to say Bob's lying about this. I don't know the real answer, but that is what Bob said to me. I believe it was Monday we spoke about it. And he did bring up an interesting point, though. Of course, you're better protected against COVID if you're fully vaccinated, but you can still get it. And I speak from experience, recent experience, in that my younger brother is fully vaccinated, yet tested positive for COVID almost 2 weeks ago. And while it was not life-threatening and he was not hospitalized, thankfully, he did suffer some symptoms. He was, you know, he had headaches and he lost his sense of taste and smell, which he has still not gotten fully back in the 2 weeks since he tested positive. And he was in bed for a few days. So even if you're fully vaccinated and you catch COVID, you could be sick. And in the case of Tyson Fury, if he tested positive for COVID 10 or 11 days ago and had to stop training for 4 or 5 days, they probably would have postponed the fight anyway. So that's kind of Bob Arum's point. Of course, he's, you know, they're trying to, you know, to put a best case scenario on what happened from their standpoint, that it would have been postponed anyway, even if he was fully vaccinated, because who really knows? I mean, we can't really say one way or the other if that would have been the case, but it's certainly possible that it would have been postponed regardless. But, you know, they should have been much more careful. They were allowing more people into the camp than they should have. They were not testing people. A lot of people, according to what Bob told me, as many as 9 or 10 people in the camp tested positive, including Efe Ajagba, who was supposed to fight Frank Sanchez on the undercard, or still will fight Frank Sanchez in what's a really intriguing heavyweight fight on the undercard October 9th. Efe Ajagba, the Nigerian heavyweight, was actually hospitalized for a day. So, you know, Andy Lee, his co-trainer, I believe, tested positive. His chef tested positive. Isaac Lowe, you know, I'm sure you've heard a lot of this yourself, Chris. So it ran through the camp pretty good. They should have been much more careful. Hopefully they will be once they reconvene in August here, because Tyson Fury is going to go back to England for a couple of weeks and then return to Las Vegas to resume training for the October 9th fight. Now, the way Bob Arum explained this to me, and again, you have to preface this by saying he said he was fully vaccinated a month ago, is that he said if he's not fully vaccinated, they can't move forward with the fight. I don't know what assurances that PBC and Wilder's team have received that they'll have documentation that he's fully vaccinated, but supposedly that is required of him to move forward with this October 9th fight.
He should get it immediately when he's over in the UK. As soon as he is physically well enough to get it, which sounds like he's right there at this point, you should get it. And by the way, there's no medical reasons not to get the vaccine shortly after you have had COVID. I know of NBA players that have done it. To be perfectly honest and to relate it to something in my own life, I mean, I had COVID in the early part of this year, and within a couple of months, I got the vaccine. So, you know, if you're Tyson Fury, if nothing else, do that immediately. My first two reactions were, one, like, I guess I can understand, like, not wanting to have an adverse reaction this late in your training camp. I know one of the top U.S. Olympic swimmers expressed something similar as he was getting ready, as you know, in recent days, as he's getting ready for the Tokyo Olympics. But Tyson Fury has been in the U.S. for months now. Like, this could have been done in May in Texas when he was at the Billy Joe Saunders fight. It could have been done in Nevada. It could have been done at that press conference when he was in California. There's any number of times he could have been proactive about getting the vaccine. That's number one. Number two, and you touched on this, like, maybe it would have happened anyway, but why are you letting so many people into your camp? And are there any kind of protocols in place for allowing these people into camp? For example, you know, I was asking around about Pacquiao because that's the next big thing, right? Like, you don't want Pacquiao or Errol Spence to wind up catching COVID and having another mega fight taken off the calendar. And one thing I was told about Pacquiao's camp is that there is daily testing going on at Wildcard. You are not allowed in Pacquiao's part of the gym unless you go through a rapid COVID test. Why was that not in place for Tyson Fury? There's enough money that's out there. That shouldn't be an issue. I find that part to be particularly mind-blowing. And by the way, Keith, I don't know about you, I still haven't really gotten a clear answer if Pacquiao's vaccinated. I got the answer about the testing. I don't really know if Pacquiao is fully vaccinated at this point.
Well, you know, Chris, I was told the same thing about the testing for Pacquiao's camp. They have a testing, like a mini testing center set up downstairs from the Wild Card where you have to take a rapid test and you obviously must pass before you are allowed upstairs to watch Manny train or to interview him and or Freddie Roach or whatever, which is a good idea. And then, of course, the people on social media, you know, are making valid points that Manny is out and about among a lot of people, who many of whom you don't know whether they're vaccinated or not. It's not like if you see someone on the street and they want to give you a hug or want an autograph or whatever, you ask them for their vaccination card or whatever. Now, of course, if he's fully vaccinated, that minimizes risk for him, of course. I've been told that Manny Pacquiao is fully vaccinated. But again, we're just taking the word of people who think they know what's happening. And again, maybe in the case of Bob Arum, he had the best of intentions, because you would think that Arum and Top Rank would have pushed Tyson Fury to get fully vaccinated because there's so much money on the line, not only for the Wilder fight. There was a lot more money on the line even before that when they thought he was going to fight Anthony Joshua. So it speaks to your point, Chris. Why didn't he get fully vaccinated in April or May or March or whatever, when you thought that you had an opportunity to make over $100 million to fight Anthony Joshua? You wouldn't want to blow that payday by just being reckless and having people come into your camp and everything. Frankly, it's idiotic. I mean, there's no real defense. It's moronic. I don't know why. There's so much money at stake, and you don't know. A million things could happen, right? I mean, they could go back into camp, and, you know, Deontay Wilder could suffer an injury, or Tyson Fury could suffer an injury, and then it just keeps going. It keeps getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. I mean, this seems like a way that they could have ensured that they fought July 24th. And then, you know, from Tyson Fury's perspective, hopefully he wins the fight, remains in position to fight Anthony Joshua if Joshua beats Alexander Usyk. It's just foolish. And I don't know how many guys are going to have to go through it and blow huge paydays. Teofimo Lopez, who's now, his fight is sort of in limbo because you don't know when it's going to happen, if it's going to happen on the Triller platform the way that it's been going here. I mean, it just keeps getting pushed back and pushed back to different cards. It's obviously not happening August 14th. So, look, I don't get it. I just don't. And honestly, there should be paperwork in place that forces these guys to do it, because they say, you know, you hear this in the outside world, outside of boxing, where there's, of course, a lot less money at stake for just regular people showing up to their jobs every day. Oh, your job can't force you to get a vaccine. Yeah, you know, that's a, you know, complicated legal issue. But in the case of putting money at your own money at risk, in the case of Bob Arum, Al Heyman, you know, before you're going into a pay-per-view event like this, they do have the right to require you to do that because there's so much risk involved for them. So you would think that people would be smarter about this than they've been, but here we are.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, for boxers, it's especially bad because with boxers, there's actual lost revenue. Like, if you catch COVID in the NBA, your paychecks still come every couple of weeks or every month. If you're a boxer, that paycheck doesn't come. And to your point, there's no guarantee that the paycheck is going to come once again. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like these guys moving forward, and you're right, whether it's Top Rank, Eddie Hearn, PBC, you've got to start mandating in these contracts that these guys are vaccinated before they agree to any type of fight. All right, let's talk about Canelo for a second here, because Eddie Hearn was on with Achim Barak on the DAZN boxing show this week, and he said this about Canelo's decision for his next fight.
No, that's what is, you know, that's what they would prefer. They would prefer to do a three-fight deal. Obviously, Canelo Alvarez, this is their opportunity to try and, you know, allure him to the network, if you like, via a Caleb Plant fight. But I feel like Caleb Plant shouldn't be a pawn in this. Caleb Plant is a guy that should get the best deal and the best opportunity for this fight. But unfortunately, that's boxing. But we'll see where it goes. And like I said, this week is the crunch week. We have to make a decision this week. September, the most likely, if it's 18, you know, is upon us. And we have two or three other fights ready to go. You know, we could abort Caleb Plant, and we could announce tomorrow.
So, Keith, you've been reporting on this for the better part of the last couple of weeks. Where do you think we stand with Canelo Alvarez and his next fight?
Yeah, I mean, it's an important week, as Eddie Hearn said, because they're sort of running out of time to properly promote a September 18th fight. You got to get to the point where, you know, you can have a press conference and send these guys into the real heart of their training camps and then come to Vegas so we can, you know, 6 days in advance and promote the fight for fight week. You're running out of time here. That's basically what this is about. So look, you know, they're apart on the money. It's like virtually everything else in boxing and in every walk of life, it's about money. And Caleb Plant wants more money than he's been offered so far. If Canelo Alvarez really wants this fight as badly as he says that he wants it, and he has made it crystal clear, I think, that this is the only fight that he wants next because he wants to become the fully unified champion in that division. That's why he took the Billy Joe Saunders fight, the Callum Smith fight. You know, he kind of put himself in a vulnerable negotiating position by being so vocal about wanting this fight and only this fight next, that Caleb Plant has some leverage here because he has the IBF title that he wants. And look, you'll pay me. I don't think, you know, he's not asking for $5 million over market value, but they're apart on the money. And to some degree, you could look at maybe blaming Caleb Plant a little bit too, because he's being offered an enormous sum of money, money that it would require him to fight 3-4 times maybe to make if he's going to have to, you know, try to account for that money. And do you want the tough fights? Right. I mean, look, if they were lowballing Caleb Plant, trying to pay him $4 million for a fight that he knows is worth more than double that, I could see it. But that's not what's happening here. So, look, his resume is thin. There's no two ways about it. He has fought. He looked good in the Uzcategui fight. Right. I mean, he won the title, faded a little bit toward the end of the fight, but it was a good win for him. And since then, look what he's done. Right. So I don't know if it. I hope that he wants the fight. I don't have any reason to believe that he doesn't, but if he turns down this kind of money to go try to fight other guys, well, you'd certainly have to question if he really wants to fight elite level fighters, because he's being offered a lot of money here. And I'm not saying he should He should squeeze as much out of it as he possibly can. No one should feel sorry for Canelo Alvarez. He's made more money than he could, than, you know, his grandchildren could spend probably. So, you know, if he's got to give a little, yeah, he's got to give a little. I mean, you want this fight, show how much you want it. So I kind of see it from both sides, but I'd be very disappointed after all of this if Caleb Plant wound up walking away from these negotiations and then goes and makes, I don't know. He's already made two mandatory defenses. So I can't imagine there's another mandatory defense to make because they counted the Caleb Truax fight. Even though Caleb Truax pulled out of the eliminator 2 days before or a day before and never actually went through with it, I get that Caleb Truax is a former IBF champion, but they counted that as his mandatory. So he does not have a mandatory due. And based on the previous matchmaking for Caleb Plant, I would kind of hate to see what kind of optional defense he's going to make if he doesn't fight Canelo Alvarez on September 18th.
It's got to be, he'd be the first one to ever knock on the door of Daryl Peoples at the IBF, be like, hey man, you got a third mandatory for me to take care of at this point? Because
yeah,
I'm ready and available. I'm ready to go.
Because Chris, seriously, I'm just to pick your brain for a second. Like, what's the Benavidez fight is not happening next. So it's not like he's going to, and frankly, that's a dangerous fight for significantly less money. It's a good fight. And I think people would be very interested in it. People love to see Plant fight Benavidez. But if you're Plant, why wouldn't you fight Canelo Alvarez in a really dangerous fight with all the titles at stake and make a lot more money? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to do it, to fight Benavidez instead.
It doesn't make any sense. And my hope is that Caleb Plant is just pushing this as far as he can push it. And then when Canelo is going ready to walk away, Caleb Plant says, all right, that last offer, I'll take it. You know, it's kind of funny. You mentioned, like, they're not offering him $4 million. And I understand what you're saying. That's a low number for a Canelo fight. But, like, how many people are watching that fight for Caleb Plant? Like, he is, his currency is that trinket around his waist, that IBF belt that he has. That has put him in this position. All credit to him. Like, it was well played. You kept that belt. You kind of knew Canelo was gonna gun for it. So you put yourself in a position to keep it. You're off since January. But this is his moment, and I don't think this moment is going to come around again. I don't expect Canelo, if he goes in a different direction in September, just turn around and be like, all right, let's do this all over again with Caleb Plant in December. I'm just not seeing it there. So my hope is that this is gamesmanship, negotiating, and that the final offer that's on the table for Caleb Plant, be it $7 million, $8 million. It's going to be a huge number. I mean, it's going to be a career high payday by a mile. And you're right, it would take him three or four fights probably to get to that number on its own, putting aside the legacy that's involved with potentially beating a Canelo Alvarez. My hope is that this is just a part of all that. But let's say, Keith, say it does fall apart. You know, Mike Coppinger over at ESPN suggested Dimitri Bivol. I've heard the same thing. That's an easy fight to make. Eddie Hearn works with Dimitri Bivol. Bivol has a title at 175. He's not big. He's skilled, but he's not big, so it's not like he's going to be a physically imposing fighter in the ring against Canelo. Do you expect that to be the fallback, or do you think they'd look in a different direction?
That's hard to say, Chris. I wonder, you know, because in the past, Dimitri Bivol has said repeatedly that he would go down to 168 to fight Canelo because he's not a big 75-pounder. And Canelo has already won a light heavyweight title. So if he's going to come down to 68, I mean, it's no lesser of a fight from an ability standpoint than Caleb Plant, right? I mean, I would, of course, favor Canelo Alvarez to win, as I would against pretty much anyone else he would fight. But it's not a lesser, you know, he's not going to become the unified champion if he takes that fight. But I think there would be interest in the fight. So, you know, and it would be cheaper. You know, Dimitri Bivol would take the fight for a lot less money than Caleb.
He'd take the $4 million. He'd take the $4 million.
He's balking at, you know, because really, what is there for Dimitri Bivol? I mean, they're not making this Beterbiev fight. I mean, you know, Beterbiev does not look like he's going to fight Joe Smith as we thought that was going to happen next. That's not going to happen. But that's not while boxing fans are interested in it, it's not like an enormous event or anything. So I don't know. Of course, Dimitri Bivol would want, I guess that's the answer, right? Bivol, of course, would want to fight Canelo next. if the plant fight falls through. And it's a good fight. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but you know, there's other guys that we would rather, that I would rather see Canelo fight, and I'm sure you would also.
Well, I mean, the one guy is Gennady Golovkin. Like that to me is still a marketable fight. Lance Pugmire, he reported last couple of days that DAZN executives had reached out to Golovkin, ask him if he's willing to fight Canelo in September. And Golovkin, of course, like, yes, I will. Of course I will. I'm ready to go. And look, I would argue that's probably still the most marketable fight out there for Canelo Alvarez. There still is, you know, outside of the boxing bubble, there are still people that remember Canelo Golovkin 1, Canelo Golovkin 2, and would have interest in Canelo Golovkin 3. And just as important, I think there is something to the idea of having a definitive winner. I mean, I take nothing away from Canelo's win in the second fight, but it was razor thin. So if Canelo can come back and win in a significant way, that'd be a feather in his cap, be a meaningful win for him, whether that fight is at 160 or more likely at 168. But on the subject of Golovkin, Keith, what do you make of what he's done the last couple of years? Since he took on Steve Rolls in June of 2019, he has fought 3 times. And unless something changes in the near future, it's likely he's going to fight once in 2020 and once in 2021, the Murata fight, which is tentatively penciled in for the end of the year in Japan. This was a guy, Keith, and you and I were both ringside at many of these fights, was begging for guys to fight him, pleading for the top names to get into the ring with him. Now, he's got an opportunity to face some of those top names, whether it's Demetrius Andrade, Jermall Charlo, David Benavidez. All these guys at 160 and 168, they want to fight Gennady Golovkin. And right now, he's out there putting out tweets saying, I'm only going to fight on my terms, effectively. What do you make of all that?
Look, I see it, Chris, from Gennady Golovkin's perspective in this way. He came to DAZN. He signed a 6-fight contract with DAZN under the premise that he was going to fight Canelo Alvarez a third time. There were so many things that went wrong in terms of how Canelo's contract was constructed between Golden Boy and DAZN that are outside of Gennady Golovkin's pay grade or what, you know, and none of this is his fault that the fight didn't happen, right? So he's holding on to that. And I think he approaches everything as it relates to DAZN based on that. Like, look, you guys promised me this fight. That's why I came here and I never got it. I still haven't gotten it. So I'm going to dictate my terms. And if you don't like it, tough. And that is basically the way he's gone about his business in the last, 2 years or whatever, but at the same time, he's well out of his prime. It's not like he's wasting his prime years. He's wasting the twilight of his career, basically, by fighting Kamaru Usman for less money than he thought that he was going to make because DAZN flat out refused to pay him that much money to fight Kamaru Usman. And understandably, it was a mandatory against a guy who never should have been in the mandatory position, which we saw that unequivocally last December. So, and now, the way it was explained to me, he wanted another sort of optional defense or stay busy fight before he fights Murata. A lot of people would kind of say that Murata's the stay busy fight because he's lost twice. And while he's a big star in Japan, even a 39 going on 40-year-old Gennady Golovkin should beat Murata. I mean, there's no two ways about it. It's a huge event in Tokyo, no question about it. And he does have, he's been elevated to the WBA super middleweight champion. When I say super middleweight champion, I don't mean 168, because these idiots have somehow decided to call the higher championships super championships to confuse people even more. But okay, so he's the WBA champion. So technically it's a unification fight. But Gennady Golovkin can't say it's important to me because it's a unification fight and then turn down every other unification fight that people actually want to see. Demetrius Andrade, flat out, they've told DAZN, we are not fighting Demetrius Andrade. Stop asking. Not doing it. Okay. What about Jermall Charlo? No, not interested. Well, then why is the Murata fight? Now, I get it. He's going to make a lot of money and he's going to go to Japan and more than likely is going to knock Murata out. But you can't have it both ways, And maybe he just doesn't care. Maybe he feels like he was wronged, to the degree that he just doesn't give a shit anymore, right? I mean, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, what's best for me and my family, for the financial future of my family. And if you don't like it, I don't care. Maybe that certainly seems to be the way he's going about it. And if that is the way he's going about it, okay, well, you know, then you can sit on the sideline and whatever, you know?
Yeah. And well, I think the other question I would have for you is how does this impact his legacy? Because look, there's certainly a strong argument that Gennady Golovkin should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, the winning the title and holding it for like a decade, you know, it was a 20 some odd title defenses, whatever it was. But you look at that resume and it's thin. And I guess you could argue that he won that first Canelo fight, but didn't get the decision. But beyond that, like, what's his best win? David Lemieux? Yeah. Sergey Derevyanchenko? Like, it's not there. And presented with an opportunity to burnish that legacy, to burnish that resume, even if it is, as you say, in the twilight of his career, he's passing. Like, he's becoming all the guys that frustrated him so badly. He's becoming Sergio Martinez. He's becoming Miguel Cotto. He's becoming Canelo Alvarez. And by the way, none of the guys we mentioned, at best, to me, they're pick'em kind of fights. Like, Demetrius Andrade is highly skilled. There's no bigger fan of Demetrius Andrade than me. But the Demetrius Andrade that fought Liam Williams, that's a beatable guy. Jermall Charlo, the guy that fought Juan Montiel, that's a beatable guy. So, like, these guys that are out there just standing with their hand up to fight Gennady Golovkin, it's not like he's going to be overmatched. Like, he'd have a legitimate, strong chance to win any one of those fights. He'd make a lot of money. He'd add to that legacy. He'd add to that resume. And still potentially get the option to fight Murata before the end of the year. And I'll tell you what, like, if Gennady Golovkin were to beat either Demetrius Andrade or Jermall Charlo in August, September, and then beat Murata at the end of the year, he'd be on a short list for Fighter of the Year because of that. So I just don't understand. I mean, I do understand, but it's just frustrating having covered Golovkin for so long to see him taking this route at this stage of his career.
Yeah, Chris, I'd say, you know, it was a draw officially. I think most people believe he beat Canelo Alvarez in their first fight.
He did. And to be clear, Keith, we're not talking about the Adelaide Bird scorecard. We're talking about that other scorecard that had like the seventh round or whatever scored for, like, the Adelaide Bird scorecard was ridiculous, but that seventh round scored correctly gives Gennady the win regardless of what Adelaide Bird had on her scorecard.
Right, right. So look, the bottom line is he should have won the first fight. Canelo edged him out in the second fight. I mean, I think most people feel, if you're objective and you're looking at it objectively, he won the second fight. Okay, so it's one apiece. The most memorable fight of his career, and I don't mean from a commercial standpoint or legacy standpoint or anything, the most memorable fight of his career was the Derevyanchenko fight because it was an absolute war, but we've discussed this on the podcast before, he might have lost that fight. You know, he won, but you I believe, had him, Derevyanchenko, winning. There were other people that had Derevyanchenko winning. It was a great fight, certainly warranted a rematch, but that's another example of, hey, look, you just had a fight of the year against Sergey Derevyanchenko. How about you guys run it back? He had no interest in that either. So didn't want that, doesn't want Andre, doesn't want Charlo. Why are you boxing? I mean, you know, I get that he wants to wait for the third Canelo fight, and that makes some sense from a financial standpoint. It definitely does. And, you know, he, again, feels like he was wronged by DAZN and to some degree Canelo and Golden Boy and everyone that was involved in that. But you can't just harp on that for the rest of your career if you're going to continue fighting until you're 41, 42, 43 years old. So I don't know what he's doing exactly. He's not, you know, he's not certainly not helping, or he's not enhancing his legacy by approaching it this way. But again, just might not care. He just might not care because this is ultimately, it's about money. It's about securing the financial future of your family. And maybe he's looking for the least amount of risk for the most amount of money. And if that's a problem for people, then either don't watch or criticize me or whatever, and he just might not care about it.
Doesn't seem like he does. And that tweet he put out is kind of evidence of that, where he says he's going to fight for me and fight for my fans, which implies he's not fighting for the critics that are out there saying, get back in the ring, fight one of these top guys. So see how it plays out. But that's, again, I think there's a very real possibility we only see Gennady Golovkin once in 2021, which would be pretty disappointing. All right, let's talk about where you are. Down in Texas, Jermall Charlo, Brian Castaño, Just like you, Keith, I love this fight. I think it's going to be all action, largely because Castaño doesn't really know anything else. I mean, I called this fight against Patrick Teixeira. Now, Teixeira is not Charlo, but he took the fight to Teixeira from start to finish and beat him badly. Just beat him up physically, beat him up on the scorecards. Castaño is a very good fighter. I thought he got a raw deal in that Arislandi Lara fight a couple of years ago. Jermell Charlo, I don't want to say he's been dismissive of Castaño, but all the things he said is like, I've seen this before. I've seen this before. And I talked to him earlier in the week, and he's coming up later in the show, and I asked him, like, where have you seen this before? Because I look at it up and down his resume, and I don't see a Castaño-like fighter that's on it. Maybe it would have been Erickson Lubin, but that fight only lasted one round. So I don't know. I don't know where he has seen the kind of pressure that Brian Castaño brings, which is not unique pressure, but you only see it in a finite number of fighters. So what do you make of this fight, and what do you make of the level of confidence that Jermell Charlo has going into it?
I don't think that Jermell Charlo is overlooking Brian Castaño because I don't think you get to the level Charlo is at. And unlike his brother, who has understandably drawn some criticism for his level of opposition other than Derevyanchenko in the middleweight division, Jermell Charlo has embraced every challenge that you possibly could in this division. Now, some of the fighters that people wanted to see him fight got knocked off. Jared Hurd, then Julian Williams. Now, people wanted to see those fights, but those guys lost their titles. So then he fought Jason Rosario, and he exposed Rosario to some extent in that fight and knocked him out. So he's taken all of the fights at the top level in the 154-pound division. Now, it's not the best division in boxing. It's not the welterweight division. It's not the lightweight division. So look, there's some criticism, some warranted criticism there for the level of top fighters in the 154-pound division, but he is the elite fighter in that division until proven otherwise now. And he wanted this fight against Brian Castaño. I agree with you, Chris, in that there's probably not a fighter stylistically that he has fought that mirrors Castaño, because it's pretty unique the way he just kind of bowls forward and comes. But I'll tell you what, if he puts his head down and comes forward against Jermell Charlo like that, he's going to get knocked out. And I think Brian Castaño is more than smart enough, and his people are more than smart enough to know that he has to somehow penetrate that. His manager used the word minefield when I spoke to him earlier at the press conference. He said, look, that little bit of space where he goes from the medium distance to right in Charlo's chest, he's got to be careful about how he navigates that space to get there, because you can't come in with your head down and expect to come out of that, you know, not flat on your back and knocked unconscious, because Charlo, despite his knockout ratio not being maybe what you would expect of a huge puncher, is a huge puncher, because he has people cold. And some guys who, look, maybe Erickson Lubin wasn't ready, as it turns out, for that fight at that point of his career. He was 22 years old when he was the mandatory challenger, but he knocked him out with one punch. You know, not that Charles Hatley is you know, an elite level fighter, but knocked him silly. The guy can punch. I mean, he knocked out Jason Rosario with a body shot that left him convulsing on the canvas. The guy can punch, obviously. A better boxer maybe than he's given credit for being. So I guess the short answer to your main question is, he overlooking him? I don't think that he is. But Brian Castaño is pretty good. I mean, he's, you know, Charlo did say to me earlier, I was, you know, walking with him after the press conference was over today, and he did say to me that he feels he has fought better fighters than Castaño. And when I asked him to identify who was better, he just said, he kind of said something like, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said something like, you know, you've seen my fights or whatever. So I guess maybe he considers Rosario better than Castaño. Castaño hasn't lost, and he's fought. Having covered that fight ringside, from what I remember, I thought Castaño deserved to beat Arislandi Lara back at Barclays Center a couple of years ago. That's the most identifiable name on his resume. Beat Teixeira very easily. I don't think a ton of Teixeira, more title holder than a, you know, legitimate champion, but he did beat convincingly to win the WBO title. And the guy that I think maybe American boxing fans aren't as familiar with that's on his resume that's very good is Michael Soro. And he went to France and he beat Michael Soro in France by split decision, which probably means that, you know, that he deserved a wide unanimous decision. And he didn't get paid And for that fight, he was supposed to fight Soro again, and it turned into this whole crazy thing. He was declared as mandatory again. He refused to go to France because he was paid in installments. That's a thing. You get paid in installments in boxing. It took almost a year for him to get paid for that first fight, so he didn't want to fight Soro again and wound up getting stripped of the WBO title. My point is, Brian Castaño has more than earned his place in this fight. He's dealt with a lot of the political bullshit in boxing to get to this point. So good for him and his family for getting this payday. Is he good enough to beat Jermell Charlo? We're going to find out in a couple of days. My instinct is probably not, but it's a very, very interesting fight, and I'm looking forward to seeing it on Saturday night.
Yeah, underestimate Jermell Charlo's power at your own risk. He's one of those rare fighters that his power seems to be growing as his competition has increased. I mean, whatever you think of, like you said, Erickson Lubin at that time, one-punch knockout, first round. Jason Rosario, eighth-round knockout. Tony Harrison, 11th-round knockout. These guys are high-level junior middleweights that were in that position for a reason. Jason Rosario legitimately knocked out Julian Williams to win those two titles, and Jermell Charlo legitimately knocked out Jason Rosario to take them off him. So his power is legit, and I agree with you. I don't think you can have the same type of strategy that you had against Patrick Teixeira. Teixeira is a solid puncher, but he's not a puncher on the level of Jermell Charlo. And if you come in too haphazardly, you're going to get caught with something big, and you are not going to get up from it if you're Brian Castaño. On the flip side, if you discover a strategy that works, like pressure can work. I mean, it's not apples to apples here, Keith, but I mean, I watched William Zepeda just beat the daylights out of Hector Tanahara just a week or so ago. That was all pressure all the time. Pressure works if you are in shape enough to apply it, and the way guys like Zepeda and Castaño and others have done it in their respective careers. But let me ask you one other thing about Charlo. I've got him inside my top 10 pound for pound at the very end of it. And largely because how I base pound for pound rankings is mostly based on accomplishment. I do believe accomplishment matters, not how a guy looks against inferior fighters. And Rosario was a champion. Harrison was a champion because he took the belt, but it was a high level junior middleweight. Lubin, I think the Lubin win looks better and better, you know, as Lubin's career goes along, because Lubin is putting himself back in position to get a rematch. A win over Castaño to become undisputed at 154. Where would you put Jermell Charlo in your rankings, or do you need to see how he wins in order to place him?
For our pound-for-pound list on BoxingScene.com, in which we all vote, we have him listed as number 7. I think he belongs in the top 10 pound-for-pound because you could argue that he should be undefeated, right? The Harrison fight, the first Harrison fight was very close, but I did think that Charlo did enough to win the fight. Regardless, there was no question about who won the second fight. He came back and knocked Tony Harrison out in the 11th round of what, again, was a competitive fight. But he avenged his only loss. He's beaten everyone that's been put in front of him, some pretty good fighters. I mean, again, it's not the deepest division in boxing, but that you can't penalize him for that. You know, I mean, this is the division in which he's operated his entire career, basically. And he's basically the ruler of that division now. So it's hard to fault a guy for that. You know, I think I'm not saying he belongs in the top 3 pound for pound, but he certainly belongs on the list, because I see all these lists and it's very subjective. And Chris, come on, it's all nonsense to a certain extent, right? I mean, it's not really quantifiable. It's about eye tests and who likes this fighter more and who likes that fighter more. But I see a lot of these lists, and Juan Francisco Estrada is on a lot of these lists. He lost his last fight. Roman Gonzalez, I don't care what the official result is. If it's a subjective thing and you're allowed to inject your opinion into it, we all know that Chocolatito beat Juan Francisco Estrada in that last fight. Yet people have Juan Francisco Estrada on their list toward the back end, you know, 10, 9, 8 or whatever. I defy anyone to tell me that Juan Francisco Estrada, after losing a fight to a guy who was thought to be shot several years ago, deserves to be on that list more than Jermell Charlo. I just don't see it. So I don't know what argument you could make to state that, but how isn't Chocolatito on the list? He won the fight.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. And look, again, it's all kind of hocus pocus. I mean, there are people just kind of, you know, they – turns out who you, there are people who sit there and tell you Terrence Crawford shouldn't even be on it because he hasn't fought any. That's come on, stop it. You know, I mean, if you hate Terrence Crawford because you don't, he has an abrasive personality or whatever, don't sit here and tell me he's not one of the top 10 fighters in the world. That's ridiculous, you know. So, but I think Charlo belongs on the list. I think he's earned that. You know, Castaño's not on anyone's list, so I don't know that, but that would be another very good fighter that he's beaten. If, you know, we wake up here Sunday morning and look back at his, at a very good win for him on Saturday night, I think it'd be hard to keep him off any legitimate list.
You would have to, because you can't keep the undisputed champion at a legitimate weight class off your pound for pound list. Just can't happen. I agree. I in fact, he jumped on my list after the Chocolatito Estrada fight because I thought Chocolatito won. So, you know, I moved Jermell Charlo out from the outside to the in, and I think that's a fair place for him to be in right now. Back end of the top 10, you get a win, move a little bit further up. And for Jermell Charlo, Keith, like, you know, the good times don't have to stop coming at 154. I mean, Danny Garcia is making noise about coming up to 154. At this point, I wouldn't mind seeing an Erickson Lubin rematch. All Erickson Lubin has done since that loss is win against quality opponents. The one fight I don't think we're going to see, and I asked Jermell Charlo about this and kind of affirmed my thinking, Errol Spence. They both have the same trainer, but man, that would be a fun fight, Keith. Like that, I know it's probably more fiction now at this point because Derek James is in the middle of it, but you know, if Errol Spence can claim like three pieces of the welterweight title, moves up, faces the undisputed guy at 154, that's a mega pay-per-view fight.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's off the table, as you mentioned, Chris, because Derek trains both guys. But I certainly get the sense in talking to Jermell Charlo today that he is going to stay at 154 pounds.
Why wouldn't he?
If he wins the fight. Well, I could see him wanting to go up to 160 for the challenges that might be there at 160 and maybe some bigger money fights. But then he's putting himself in a position where people are pitting him against his brother even more than they do now.
But like what fights? Like what fights? Like his brother has tried that. Is like unless Jermell's gonna cross the street or take on an Andrade or somebody like that. I don't know. I mean, he runs into the same problems as Jermell.
Yeah, yes, I think you're right. But I think maybe the way he's gone about his career as opposed to his brother, maybe he would be more forceful about trying to get some of those fights and maybe more willing to go to the quote unquote other side of the street or whatever to make some of those fights happen. But anyway, he does not seem interested in that. He seems like he wants to stay at 154 pounds. I did specifically ask him about fighting Erickson Lubin again, because if I'm him, why am I fighting this guy again? I knocked him out in the first round with one punch. Why am I being forced to fight him again? That's the way now maybe he's not saying that, what I just said. But maybe in his mind, he's like, yeah, you're going to pay me a couple million, whatever it winds up being, $3 million to fight a guy knocked out with one punch. Yeah, sure. Let's do it again. Maybe that's, but it's not going to be received well, despite that Lubin has won. Look, the Rosario win was excellent. You know, he's beaten Nathaniel Gallimore. You know, he's beaten some real Terrell Gaucher. I mean, he's got some real wins since that fight. But I think more than anything, I think people still think that Erickson Lubin, as tough of a kid as he is, as good of a boxer as he is, as powerful as he is, does not have a good chin. And if he gets in there with Jermell Charlo again, I'm not saying he's going to get knocked out with one punch in the first round, but you would have to favor Charlo to knock him out again. So I don't know what the public's response is going to be if he's forced into that. And Lubin is now the mandatory challenger for the WBC title again. If you're a network, are you paying a lot of money to, like, what is the justification for a rematch? Like, there's no controversy. The fight obviously was not competitive, so I don't know how you would sell that fight exactly. But look, like you said, Danny Garcia is a potential opponent. You know, there's some other fighters, up and coming fighters. Tim Zhu, as I know you want to discuss
it. Let's get, that's a perfect opportunity to get into Tim Zhu, because I am starting to really like Tim Zhu. I understand he's not fighting elite competition, but this guy's not just a name. This guy is not Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. capitalizing on the name of his father, in this case, the great Kostya Zhu. Tim Zhu is skilled. Tim Zhu has power. And I'm wondering, who is going to be the first big name that takes on Tim Zhu, either in the U.S. or tries to go for a big paycheck over in Australia? I mean, we saw Manny Pacquiao go over there years ago and take on Jeff Horn. Didn't work out for Manny Pacquiao, in part, and the judges may have said something to do with that. But, I mean, there's real money to be made if you go over there and fight in Australia, at least under non-kind of COVID circumstances. What do you think? What do you think of Tim Tszyu, and what do you think the next, the first big fight he's going to be able to talk himself into?
I mean, it's hard to know what to make of him entirely, Chris, because he has a couple of good domestic wins on his record. Obviously, he beat Jeff Horn very easily. He beat Dennis Hogan. Those are good wins against domestic level fighters, but he hasn't beaten.
He beat them up too. Like he beat both those guys.
Yeah, thoroughly beat up both guys who were, you know, both, well, certainly in the case of Jeff Horn, very popular fighters in Australia. But he hasn't beaten anyone at the world level. But like you said, he's not a Chavez where he's just living off his father's name. The kid can fight a little bit. We'll see how well he actually can fight moving forward. But I do remember, and it caused a little bit of a controversy. They said they were going to, Zoo's people said they were going to send a $10 million offer to Jermell Charlo. And Jermell Charlo, I remember, was very adamant about the fact that they had not sent that. I think they said they were going to or something. And we actually, I didn't write the story, but we had a story on our website that kind of said something like like Charlo was dismissive of the $10 million offer, which is, I don't.
Hey, Keith, a lot of stuff in the Charlo's email spam folder gets, a lot of stuff gets caught there. I mean, well, you know, Jermall of the 7 million, maybe the 10, maybe it's in the same folder. I don't know.
Look, he's, I'm not going down that rabbit hole, but, but I'll say this, you know, he said his point was, is I did not receive a $10 million offer from the Tszyu people. If he did, you know, like just let's say he beats Brian Castagno on Saturday and he wants to remain in the 154 pound division. It'd be pretty hard to turn down. I understand he feels like.
Take it.
Right. But here's the thing. If you go to Australia and you're Jermell Charlo, of $10 million is an enormous amount of money. And, you know, you can take care of your family for, and he's made good money, but you can take care of your family for a very long time with a $10 million. I get it. But you're taking a risk going down there in that. Look what happened in the Manny Pacquiao Jeff Horn fight. No one thinks Jeff Horn won that fight, right?
No.
But he did. Now, Pacquiao allowed Jeff Horn to get away with a lot of things, and, you know, it didn't go about it in the smartest way, but he won the fight. He should have won the fight, and the official result is he lost, and they didn't fight for a year and whatever. So if you're Charlo and you have all four titles, you're going to have to go to Australia to make that $10 million, or just let's say it's $9 million. It's a lot of money, right? But do you do that knowing that you have kind of feel like you have to knock this kid out to win the fight? I don't know.
I would in a heartbeat. And look, you do what every major fighter does. You put a rematch clause in that contract. Mm-hmm. So if in the case something bad happens in Australia with the judges, you get a rematch in Texas and California and Las Vegas. And quite frankly, it's probably even bigger and even more money for you. I know everybody wants to maintain that glossy record as long as possible, but I mean, you think Anthony Joshua is really all that upset that he lost Andy Ruiz after what he made in the second fight? Not that it's the same level of fights, but sometimes things go wrong. It turns into big paydays for you. Like I look at Tim Tszyu, but I look at Tim Tszyu, Keith, as being again, if that $10 million offer is real, and I think we both would agree, I don't know about the $10 million, but there is real money in Australia. Like you go there and you can make some real money. Pacquiao did. If that's real, I would find a way to jump at it because Tim Tszyu, as much as I think of him, he's not ready for Jermell Charlo. Like that would be going from D or C level opponents to A level. And not good things don't usually happen when that type of situation presents itself.
Yeah. And maybe that's the way Jermell Charlo would look at it too, that he feels like Tim Tszyu can't beat him, no matter that he would go there and knock him. He hasn't said that, but maybe he feels like he'll go knock him out and it won't matter about going to the scorecards because it's not going to get to the scorecards. And hey, he has a lot of confidence in himself, as we well know, and maybe he would look at that as an opportunity he couldn't pass up. I mean, if it's a real $10 million offer, and I'm not pretending to know whether it is or it isn't, but if it's a real $10 million offer, it would be hard to turn down. I agree with that, but I don't know. You know, he could make a lot of money to fight other guys. I'm not saying $10 million, but maybe guys who he feels, you know, that he wouldn't be risking another controversial loss on his record. I don't know.
Well, you kind of hinted at this though, Keith, like Jermell may be a little more interested in legacy than his brother is at this point. Like he's seeking out the big fights. He's not taking tune-up fights necessarily when they're presented to him, which I'm sure are possibilities. Maybe he's got that kind of appetite for, you know what? Let me be a world champion. Let me go travel to Australia, you know, fight in front of, I don't know, 70,000 people in Melbourne or Sydney or wherever you're going to do a fight like that, knock off the son of a Hall of Famer, then go back home and fight Danny Garcia. Then that fight's not going to go anywhere. I mean, There's a practicality to all this that maybe Jermell just gets and will be more interested in going down that path.
Yeah, he might. But the thing is, if he goes to Australia, I'm sure he would like to have an event on his resume that drew 70,000 people. Who wouldn't, right? But if he beats Tim Tszyu, that's not going to strengthen his legacy by any stretch. Tim Tszyu hasn't beaten anyone and is unproven at the championship level. So it would be worth it.
Like, who cares? Like, who cares?
Well,
like,
no, I get
every fighter does the event versus the.
Of course. You know, no, I wouldn't condemn him for doing it. I'm just saying, you know, it's not going to enhance his legacy in terms of the strength of his opponents by any stretch. But again, $10 million is a lot of money. And if and that's a. Mm-hmm. If it's a real offer, hard to pass that up.
All right. So to the Australian audience that I know is listening right now, Keith hates you. That's your big takeaway from this this podcast. He will not be traveling to Australia for Charlo Tszyu.
I would love to go to Australia.
Hey, that fight gets made. We're both going to Australia.
I do not want to do a 2-week quarantine in a hotel. I'll say that. But
that's true. I know some people that have done that. That's not. It's every bit as miserable as you would imagine it would be. So, yeah. And this has come from someone that did a 7-day quarantine in the NBA bubble, and that was fairly miserable as well. Double that up, not for me. Not for me. Keith, keep up the great work this week. Follow everything that has to do with Jermell Charlo, Brian Castaño, one of the biggest fights of the summer. That fight can be seen on Showtime. Follow Keith's stuff on his Twitter account at IDECBoxing, of course, over at BoxingScene.com all weekend. Keith, great to catch up, man. We'll do it again soon.
Same here, Chris. Take care, man.
We've all had that dream. Tie game, bottom of the ninth, bases loaded. Well, on FanDuel Sportsbook, you get more than one shot to swing for the fences because FanDuel's letting you place your first bet risk-free. That's right. New users get up to $1,000 back in site credit if your first bet doesn't win. And it only gets better from there. Check out FanDuel's new promo live every Tuesday, $5 Dinger Tuesdays. Place a $25 wager or more on any player to hit a home run on Tuesday and get a $5 bonus in-site credit for every home run hit in the game, max $25. Make your MLB picks per the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Same game parlay is preferred. Any local player you would place a 25-plus home run wager on this Tuesday to opt in to the promotion? My pick, Shohei Ohtani. There's a reason FanDuel Sportsbook is America's number one sportsbook. The app is simple to use, great odds, all different betting markets, unique fun, bet types like same game parlay, which is great. Their same game parlay is fantastic. Always on promotions to let you get more action out of every game. And when you win, FanDuel pays your winnings in as little as 24 hours. They do. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, sign up, promo code BOXING. To get in on the action, FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code BOXING. 21 plus and present in Indiana or Jersey. First online real money wager, only for risk-free bet, refund and bonus issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max bonus, $25 a game. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gaming problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana or 1-800-GAMBLER. In Jersey.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days. And take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
All right, Jermell Charlo is here, unified 154-pound champion. On Saturday, he tries to become the first undisputed junior middleweight champion in the four-belt era when he takes on Brian Castaño. That's a fight you can only see over at Showtime. So, Jermell, winning the undisputed championship, first time anyone will have won it in the four-belt era, where would that rank for you among career accomplishments?
I think it'll be a super big accomplishment for me because, you know, my family's happy. I've accomplished a goal that, you know, I watched the new movie Undisputed growing up when it was fighting in prison. So it's just like so much of that is a big thing to me. And, you know, it's a super big accomplishment, something that I would always want.
Where would you put yourself in the pound for pound rankings?
I don't know about the power rankings. I'm not the one to make the judgment. You are. You know, I got to ask you what you would put me, or what do you have me now? You know what I'm saying? It's like,
honestly, I have you in the top 10 because I'm a believer that accomplishments matter when it comes to the pound for pound rankings. It's not just the eye test. You actually have to do it against top level opponents. And one thing about you, especially the last few years, it's just one top-level opponent after the other that you're beating. So I would have you in the top 10.
Correct. I mean, if you think about it, everybody I fought has at least been one or two or somewhat in that sort. I think Jorge Cotto wasn't, but he was a replacement opponent for Tony Harrison, fake ankle injury, and then I came back to beat him. So it's like so many different things that I've done in the sport of boxing that, you know, sometimes we don't get the recognition for or that don't get talked about, but I'm not here to just strive by that. I just got to keep on trying, keep on going.
So you want to that point, Jermell, you're one of those guys that is consistently getting or taking these big fights. I mean, you're not looking for any kind of, you know, easy title defense or whatever. You're looking for that top level fight, which you've had, as you said, over the last couple of years. Why is that? Why are you consistently chasing those big fights and not taking those tune-ups, which we know are available?
It has to be able to build my career, you know, build my legacy. You know, you can't build your legacy fighting guys when they go back over there, they're gonna say, yeah, I knocked out who did you knock out? You know, so that's why I'm always at the top level trying to fight the best and the best and to win the best. Everybody had titles. Everybody that talked shit to me, I wanted to fight them. Anybody that called me out, it's just like that type of shit.
You know, one of the things I admire about your style is that, you know, a lot of guys, their power and their knockouts come early in their career. You at the championship level are able to A, knock guys out, and B, at least in recent fights, do it in the later rounds. It was the 11th round against Tony Harrison. It was the 8th round against Jason Rosario. The power that you're showing in these recent fights, I mean, how has your power evolved over the recent years?
Man, I think I'm getting stronger the older I get, you know? So the better, you know, I work on my strength and I work on my power throughout the whole time, even fight week. I'm just a small guy, you know, just got to keep the power going. You know, just my brother is much larger than me. He has power, but I feel like I'm just strong. You know, like I'm heavy handed in both hands, speed in both hands. So you add these two together, you become ferocious.
And I would think a lot of it is you're able to make that 154. It seems like relatively comfortably. You don't have to drain yourself to get there.
At all.
You mentioned something about Castaño. You said that what he's going to bring is nothing you haven't seen before. I was at his last fight. He's a pressure fighter, threw 1,100 punches against Patrick Teixeira. Who have you faced that brings that type of style into the ring?
Well, I mean, that's cool. That's good. I'm glad he threw that many punches. I mean, Teixeira must have no power, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he couldn't get that guy off of him. At least you got to sit down on your punches. And I think that's the thing about me is we can trade and trade. I done took some punches and he threw 1,100 punches, why the fuck he didn't knock him out? Like, you know what I mean?
Is that kind of your – I mean, do you see this fight going where he's going to walk into something of yours?
It could possibly happen that way. It possibly can happen that way. I don't know how this fight going to go. I can't predict the future. See it this Saturday.
You know, if you win this title, you'll have accomplished about everything you can accomplish at 154 pounds. I mean, how do you see your future after this fight?
I would have to sit back with my team and my family and see what I really want to do. How much I really want to do this, and because I mean, when you get to the top, you can't do nothing but come down. You know, they only make you fall, hit your head, hit rock bottom or something. I'm not interested in that no more in my life. I'm 31 years old. I can't keep trying to prove to the world when the world not even proving shit to me. So I don't know what I'm gonna do in my career. I want to keep boxing because this is my passion. I love boxing, but maybe I could be some top tier promoter. Maybe I could be. I could come in. I don't know what I'll do. I don't know yet. Like, I just want to get this fight out the way and be at my best.
Do you look at kind of the problems your brother has had getting big fights at 160 as kind of a reason to stay away from that division?
No, I don't. I don't want to. I don't look at it like that. My brother is, he's rich. He's happy. He got a big ass fat crib. A lot of cars. Nice everything. So. Something is not something that they talking about doesn't matter because life is good. That's the thing about it. You know, I don't know. Everything is great going on in his life. So if he has issues with opponents or he's a champion, you know, he might not. Everybody's trying to be somebody else. That's the problem. You got to be yourself. You got to live your life of what you got to be. You can't. My brother can't go over there thinking like, oh, I got to try to be like Jamel. Get all the bells. So I gotta, whatever opportunity you have at that moment, you gotta just seize it.
You know what? When I look at it, there still are potentially big fights at 154. Like if you stick around that division, what's really interesting is, you know, Errol Spence keeps talking about moving up to 154. You two have the same trainer. How problematic for you would it be to fight an Errol Spence?
It'd be a lot of problems. Like it'll be problematic. It's not something that I see in the future. It's not something that I would want. It's not something that I even take interest in. It's so many fights in 154 that we can all make happen. So me and my brother own the division together. I can't own it with my top 147 stable made in Texas. It's no big deal. I'm not selfish like that.
What if Errol Spence is undisputed at 147 and says I'm coming to 154 and you're undisputed at 154?
It's all about making the right fights happen, bro.
I hear you, man. But I'm sure that'll be a fight people will be talking about for a long time if that ever came to be. Jermell, good luck, man. I think this fight is tremendous on Saturday, and I'm looking forward to seeing you and Castaño in action, man. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi Elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
All right, Tyron Woodley is a former UFC welterweight champion. On August 29th, he will try his hand at boxing when he faces Jake Paul. That fight will take place in Cleveland, Ohio, and will be televised on pay-per-view. Tyron, you're talking to me just after the press conference for this fight. Any big takeaways for you from this event?
No, not really, man. You know, I feel like this is a different separate from the fight. Fight is one thing, the preparation, the mentality, the confidence going in that, and the press conference is just really exuding what you feel like, whether it's real or fake. So for me, everything I said, I believe. Everything I say, I feel like it's true and authentic, and I don't have anything in my body, anything for my coaches or anything different to tell me that this is not going to happen. With him, I feel like he's saying what he thinks he needs to say. I think he's trying to play the mental warfare games. I just don't play those kind of games. I don't really play games at all. And at the end of the day, I feel like, you know, he really, really, really wants me to buy into it and bite into the bait like everybody else has done, and I'm not doing it.
What do you think of Jake Paul?
To be honest, I mean, people call me every 5 minutes to knock him out. Got to knock him out. I feel like he's utilizing what he's done in the YouTube realm as an entertainer, because he's an entertainer. That's entertainment. To bring it over to this sport, which is also entertainment, and try to, you know, maximize. So can I hate on him? I can't really hate on him. I think that, you know, as an athlete, pretty athletic. He got power in his hands. I feel like as far as experience and what it takes to really be at the top, he don't know. He thinks he knows from viewing, but I've done it. I've been there. You know what I mean? I've been around it. I'm coached by it still. And that's kind of what I feel about him. So I'm not really taking on all the trash, all the people that want me to beat them up for them. I'm going out there for myself. I'm going to get the job done.
You were one of the great welterweights in UFC history, but what experience do you have in the boxing world?
I've been boxing since 2008. I started with Eric Brown, Walker Boxing. You know, so I've definitely had a boxing, probably be, I want to say 50 to 60% of my training for a very long time. Now it's just utilizing the assets and the resources that I have to go out there and just put myself in a position to be a great boxer. Boxing for MMA is different than boxing for boxing. And that's kind of what I'm learning right now. It's just taking the time, being patient with myself. I don't have to learn everything overnight, but I am being diligent. I am really trying to correct things that I know that won't play well for me in boxing that I could get away with in MMA.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, because you are a very heavy-handed fighter. There's no doubt about that. But watching you fight, as I've gone back and looked at some of the footage, you throw punches like an MMA fighter, which you should. You're in mixed martial arts at that time. You throw kind of wide when you're fighting like that. Do you need to change, you know, fundamentally who you are as a fighter to get into this fight?
No, I just threw the punches to where the target was at. Sometimes the target is not narrow. You don't throw a narrow punch at a wide target. Wide target, you throw a wide punch. So in MMA and the different obstacles that you got to deal with, the striking, the kicking, the you know, the wrestling, the defense, you got to really be looking out for a lot of stuff, elbows, knees, spinning attacks. So boxing is a different stance. So it wasn't that I was throwing a punch wide. I was landing a punch in a place it needed to be landed in. Now this is a different sport, different stance, and a different target. So I'm going to throw the shots. When you see me box, I'm going to look like a pro boxer.
In that sense, do you feel like you're going to be comfortable throwing jabs, setting up punches that way?
Yes, sir.
The you know, for this fight, you mentioned Eric Brown, who you started with. Who are you working with as far as boxing training for this fight?
I'm continuing working with Eric Brown, but I'm primarily in Miami, Florida, working with Pedro Diaz, also Floyd Mayweather, and Gerald, which we call GT. Basically putting together a dream team. Everybody does something different. One person's really for the drill, the repetition, the commitment, the conditioning, the scheduling, the planning. Other parts is the boxing, the chess match, the strategy, the finesse, and, you know, making people miss and making them pay. And Eric is just old school. He knows me more than anybody. He knows what button to push. He knows if I'm slacking, if I'm, you know, doing well, or if I'm, you know, loafing. He knows how to talk to me. He got the respect for me. So he'll be pushing me at a different level too. So collectively, I think that team put together is going to be phenomenal.
Pedro Diaz is a known name in boxing circles. He's had a lot of success in his training career. What have you taken from him?
Well, basically the mindset, his commitment, his obsession with winning. All he talks about is win every day, win, win, train for the win. And it's a different to train and train to get better and train to win. So everything that we're doing is to inflict damage, hurt the opponent, make them want to give up, and to take them out.
You know, you're an excellent fighter, Tyrone. Fundamentally, I believe, though, and I've always believed, that mixed martial artists can't beat boxers in boxing, and boxers can't beat mixed martial artists in the octagon. And there's been evidence of that, of course. You know, whether it's Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, Jake Paul recently with Ben Askren. And the reverse is true. Obviously, James Toney, I mean, I was there in Boston when he fought Randy Couture. That was over quickly. Why is your situation going to be different?
Well, you can't ever put Jake Paul in the same conversation as a great fighter like James Toney fighting Randy Couture, the natural. You can't put that in the same instance of Conor McGregor, who's a great MMA fighter, fighting against Floyd Mayweather. Jake Paul was a fighter because he fought, not because of his resume, not because of his history, not because of what we know him for. We knew him for different things before he took those fights. Those more were celebrity fights. Back in the day, those would be celebrity charity fights. So for me, it's a dude that want to fight me, and I want to fight him. We're going to get it on.
You hit a lot harder than Ben Askren, no doubt, but Ben went down from that first big shot that Jake landed. Now, I think Jake, while he's not a championship-level boxer by any stretch, I think he can box. I mean, what will you do differently, and what can you do differently than a Ben Askren could do?
Move my head.
Just get it out of the way.
And you want an in-depth answer, or you want just a real shit? Move your head. That's all he could have did differently in that moment, not to get hit.
Mm-hmm. Taking shots that a Jake Paul could throw, how confident are you that you can take those types of punches?
Yeah, I've been in many wars. I've been against heavy hitters. I've been against Hall of Fame fighters, so I feel very confident. But more importantly, I'm more thinking about making them miss the punches, making them take my punches. So I'm not sitting in the gym trying to see how many punches I can take.
But is it when you go into sparring in boxing, which I'm sure you've done at this point, is it different how it taking punches from a boxer than it is taking shots in the MMA octagon?
You mean since I've been boxing sparring since 2008?
Yeah, I mean, boxing, it's not necessarily about the power of the punch. It's like throwing a shot that you don't see coming.
The sparring with the world champions, boxing sparring with, they're not going to throw any punches any harder or any less because I'm fighting Jake Paul. When I was sparring them, at the time I was sparring them, they were boxing me like they're boxing their next opponent. So for me, I'm not really worried about it.
And just the last thing for you, there's been a lot of MMA fighters trying to get into boxing, understandably so. Do you feel like in a way you're representing MMA fighters, representing UFC fighters, not just yourself in a situation like this?
I think I always represented MMA fighters because I was always a trailblazer. I was always the first. I was the first one with Champ Camp. I was the first one that really stepped out and did the music thing. I was the one that had been in the most films out of everybody, more than Randy, more than Ronda Rousey. You know, literally, so when you think about it, I've always been the person that went first, podcasting, television shows, commercial producing. So I'm just an artist overall. Our sport is called mixed martial what?
Arts.
Arts. So you can't tell me when I'm going to use what paintbrush or what canvas. So for me, this is nothing new. I've always been the person that broke the ground. I've always been the first to do it. And the first person always takes the most risk. And I'm okay with that.
Are you as confident going into this fight as you were at championship level fights in UFC?
For sure. 100%. As confident, if not more.
Well, Tyrone, looking forward to seeing this fight. It's already got a lot of buzz. August 29th, Showtime pay-per-view. Good luck, man, and thanks for joining me.
Appreciate you, my man.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Keith Idek, Jermell Charlo, and Tyrone Woodley for joining the show. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review this podcast anywhere you download podcasts, and we'll see you next week.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.